Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Haste trips up its own heels. Michel de Montaigne. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, and Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this week. I appreciate the support. If you're a newcomer, welcome. Please listen to and enjoy this episode, and if you feel so inclined, please peruse our backlog of episodes. I know I've had a couple of people reach out in the comments from some fairly old episodes recently, and I do appreciate you all for doing that. Please listen and enjoy, and go back and listen to older episodes if you'd like. And to my returning listeners, as always, thank you guys so much. I appreciate your support, as always. There is a lot going on in the world right now, some of the bigger things in the whole archaeological historical community, there have been some big papers published this weekend, and not just papers, but discoveries announced and all that kind of stuff, some of which is kind of, you know, related to what we've been discussing the last few weeks. They have determined that the Dragon Man, the famous fossil found in China, was actually of a Denisovan. They've been able to confirm that with DNA evidence. That's something very big, which I think some people have suspected that for a while, but it's nice to have confirmation. They also discover the tomb of Egyptian Pharaoh Thutmose II. I'm very much looking forward to finding out what they found there, if they found anything particularly earth-shattering. His is one of the more well-documented documented reigns, but, maybe we'll find some new facts or some more information to shed some light on some maybe obscure aspects of his life and personality and all that kind of stuff. But for this week, I don't really have too much feedback, so we're going to go ahead and dive into the topic for this week, which is the study of Southeast Asia, maritime Southeast Asia, I should say, between the years of 6 and 4000 BC, BCE, whichever you prefer. Now, I will just go ahead and point out that some of this will also cover the Malay Peninsula, which is technically part of mainland Southeast Asia. And we've kind of covered parts of that earlier this season, but this will kind of cover other parts that will, in the future, kind of be more seaward focused and on the islands of like Borneo and Java and places like that. And so essentially this would cover parts of what is now Indonesia and Malaysia. And I believe Brunei as well. There are many other countries, of course, that would be covered in that too, but those are the big ones I can think of off the top of my head. Now, some of you may remember that we've also gone over some of the geography in the area, and also talking about the geography of Polynesia, Micronesia, and the other kind of maritime islands in this area, and there will not be any coverage of those this season, of course, because they haven't been occupied by humans, at least as far as we know. Though, that process may be beginning at the very end of this season, around 4000 BC or so. That's kind of the earliest estimates of when some people see that those islands, or at least the westernmost parts of those islands, are first visited and then eventually inhabited. Though, obviously, there is a little bit of debate of that. Some people push it back to about 3000 BC. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they had visited those islands earlier and just didn't make a run of living there until later. But that's all stuff we'll discuss for the future. But mainly the bigger islands kind of on the path towards Australia from Asia. Those are what we'll be covering, the larger islands, essentially. Another factor to kind of keep in mind during this season is, we've talked about it several times, but the sea level has slowly been rising for the last, essentially 4,000 years or so. It was considerably lower, around 10,000 BC, but it's gotten steadily higher with maybe some aberrations where it lowers again. But right around 6,500, 6,000 BC, the sea level is fairly close to what it is now. So it's important to keep in mind that we may be missing, you know, parts of the archaeological record in these areas because, you know, people may have been living closer to the coast, which is now underwater. So be sure to keep that in mind as well. Now, the people living in these areas are in the Neolithic. Technically, they are developing bladelets, but they haven't gotten rid of their Paleolithic or Mesolithic tools completely. They still do have some larger, less polished stone tools, but they do have some, and they do make some microblades. So they are considered part of the Neolithic at this point in their history, and they've been so for about 1,000 years. They are believed to have been related to the Halbanian, possibly, you know, very closely related, though there are some that suggest they may be kind of a earlier wave of migrants, and then they back married, I guess, other Halbanian people. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Those are just theories. We do have some remains that have been found dating to this period in the Lingang Valley in the Malay Peninsula. This is known as the Perak Woman. She was found, I believe, in 2004, and she was buried right around 6,000 BC in this cave. And she's named similarly to a individual known as the Perak Man. He died about 9,000 years ago, he died about 9,000 BC, which is like 11,000 years ago, excuse me. He was buried not too far from her in a separate cave. The burial is kind of similar in terms of, you know, how it was arranged, but so there's some level of continuity in terms of burial practices, at least in the area. So nothing revolutionary has happened between 9 and 6,000 BC just yet in the area. And there are still people who are related to these individuals, you know, living in the area, though they are a minority. These are the Semai people, as well as the Timiar people. And there's a few different groups. The Semai, there's about 50,000 of them left, and the Timiar have about, their population's debated because some of them have urbanized and moved into, you know, into cities, but they are anywhere between 40 to 120,000 individuals. The ones that have not urbanized still live in fairly small, semi-sedentary communities, even to this day, with anywhere between 20 to 200 individuals living in villages. They have homes where the nuclear family lives. In some cases, they'll have like one or two maybe extended relatives living with them, but for the most part, it is a father and mother and their children and maybe an older generation of parent or grandparent from either, you know, matrilineal or patrilineal side. They don't make as much of a distinction when it comes to that sort of thing. They are animists, though they have had plenty of contact with Hinduism, Islam, Christianity. So some of those beliefs have seeped in, and there are some concepts that do show up in the modern Semai faith, but most part they're, sorry for the cut there, I was pausing for the sirens to go by, but for the most part their beliefs are categorized as animists. They, you know, believe in spirits of nature, animals, that sort of thing, and they do have some deities, though they're just more of along the lines of greater or more powerful spirits. Though, again, you know, through contacts with polytheistic religion like Hinduism, they may have taken some aspects from Hindu gods and given it to their own versions of those forces of nature and that kind of thing. They hunt, gathered, and fished, and they, at least in the modern day, they still practice kind of a communal food sharing. What they'll do is, whenever they have a particular harvest or a large catch of fish or a large animal that they've hunted, they will share it first among their nuclear family, and then whatever they have to spare, they'll share with their, you know, immediate neighbors. And then if they have, you know, even more to share from that, they will kind of spread it out further in the community. Though, you know, they would never, you know, ask someone to share that something that they didn't have themselves. So you take care of your family first, immediate family, and then your extended family, and then your neighbors from there. They, at least in the modern day, and, you know, we don't know how this has gone that far back or how long this has been going on, but they would not marry individuals who they shared a grandparent with. So there is some level of intermarriage between villages to help prevent, you know, inbreeding and things like that. They also developed long-range trade networks. People would trade different types of tools or material to make tools, as well as shells. Shells are very important for the economy, and of course they're used for, you know, creating jewelry or, you know, ornamentation, things like that. They are also probably practicing either early version of proto-agriculture, horticulture, things like that, because the Sonoy do adopt agriculture fairly close to this time frame, maybe a little bit after 6,000, maybe a little bit later than 5,000. But they do practice slash-and-burn agriculture, essentially. And this is tied to the Samai and the Timiars people's ancestors. These as a group are collectively known as the Sinoy people. And they're the ones that are associated with the spreading of agriculture. And they're a very mixed bunch ethnically. They are considered, you know, a mix of the people coming down from the north, the Halbanian, and the Samang, who are also known as the Negritos, who we've talked about in the past. And that leads us into the Samang themselves. Now, the Sonoy have about half of their matrilineal DNA can be linked to Negrito groups. Now, who the Samang people are is also to be debated. Some people think that they are the descendants of earlier Halbanian groups, or that they may have, you know, come in the first wave of migration after, you know, people got to Australia, that they're the ones that kind of moved into the area after what became the Australians moved out. Though, again, this is all debated and it's not 100% clear. They were and remain mostly hunter-gatherers, though they do have some cultivation of crops, though there it's not agriculture like at a large scale. It's more that they're tending semi-domesticated or domesticated sources that they have left and, you know, kind of let grow wild, and then they'll come back and kind of harvest what they need and, you know, spread seeds where they were or when they're going to come back to. But there are not many Samang peoples left today. I think there's only around 5,000 or so, and they're spread across, you know, a couple of islands. And there's been a very large push, you know, for these people to be integrated, in some cases, into, you know, the the European governments have tried to do it, but then also, you know, as well as places in Malaysia, the Malaysian governments tried to convert them to Islam and kind of integrate them into society too. And the people who are occupying or living in what is now Indonesia, the larger islands, Java, Sumatra, the Sunda Islands, those are being lived in by, or yeah, the people living in those islands are probably more closely related to the Samang than the Senoi, at least at this early stage. And they're doing fairly well on those islands. Their population is probably higher there than it is in the Malay Peninsula, because they're not having to deal with the Senoi peoples. They also have a, you know, just as a wide variety of plants and animals to kind of feed from. They also, of course, have access to the open ocean, which some of those places, the Malay Peninsula, where we've talked about, are in kind of very mountainous terrain or river valleys, which there are definitely mountains on some of those islands, but it's sometimes it's easier to get to the coast from them on the islands than it is in the Malay Peninsula. And there is evidence that they are also beginning to practice kind of proto-agriculture or even full-blown agriculture. Sadly, there hasn't been too much research done, archaeologically speaking, on these very early dates just yet. It's something that the Indonesian government is working at, I believe, though they have other issues that have kind of slowed this process. And not to mention that, you know, there are still many less centralized groups that they have to take account of and respect. There are numerous kind of independence movements or, you know, separatist movements or just more autonomous movements kind of spread all across those islands. So they have to be very careful about the kind of work that can be done, for, you know, a number of reasons. And, you know, those people don't necessarily look kindly on the central government, you know, digging up their ancestors, you know, for, you know, fairly, you know, understandable reasons, I think. So, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot we can go for these earliest dates just yet. One of the things that is going to be coming up very much next season when we get back here is the arrival of more Austronesian peoples into the area as they begin to spread out along the coasts, and sea travel, you know, connects further places than just mainland Southeast Asia. But that is something that we're going to have to dive into. Unfortunately, this is going to be a little bit of a shorter episode this week, as will next week's. We're kind of in some areas where there's a little bit less to kind of go over and talk about. But I did want to mention, you know, again, the Samai and the Timiar people, just because, you know, they are considered by most to, you know, still carry some of these traditions into the modern, you know, modern day, even though, you know, these are probably not exactly the same traditions, and they've been influenced by other groups, you know, moving in. So I just wanted to bring that up and talk about it a little bit. Again, sorry it's a shorter episode. Next week will still be about the same. We'll finish up probably kind of North Asia, and then I think we'll do Australia after that, and then we'll continue back across kind of to northern Central Asia, you know, very far eastern end of Europe, the Ural Mountains, those areas. And then we'll move into Europe proper, go through all those places, talk about kind of the western Anatolia peninsula. And then, yeah, we'll continue to go from there into the rest of Europe. And then we'll head towards the Americas, which is, you know, hopefully we can finish this season up by the end of the year. I think we can. You know, we'll have a little bit more to work with in some of those other places than we do this week. It's a really interesting part of the world, and I'd like to know more about this very earliest date. But unfortunately, finding sources in English is extremely hard. I found several papers in French that I tried to translate as best I could, but I wasn't able to get much other than some, very broken translations from like AI and Google Translate and stuff. So. Very unfortunate. I did see that article about this isn't real history, at least to my opinion. The Gunung Padang temple / pyramid. If you Google that, it's G-U-N-G, or excuse me, it's G-U-N-U-N-G. And that's Padang, P-A-D-A-N-G. That was featured on Graham Hancock's show, which, while entertaining, I don't put too much scientific evidence into that. And the publishers of the article claiming it dates back to about, 12,000 BC have retracted that article, though the authors did protest. But, if you Google... anything about Indonesia prior to 4000 BC, that article is going to pop up. And it's very annoying when you're trying to find like more vetted academic sources. So, very frustrating actually, but, it's a very interesting read if nothing else. If you guys have any questions, comments, constructive criticism, please let me know. You can reach me at waradrevpod@gmail.com. You can contact me via direct message on X/Twitter, or you can comment on the YouTube videos. I will respond eventually when I get the chance. I try to respond to all my comments there, and of course to all my emails and stuff on Twitter. But I appreciate everyone's support. We're over 300 subscribers on YouTube now. We had a very busy week. I do live stream on YouTube and on Twitch. I've been monetized on Twitch, so hopefully I'll earn a little bit of cash to put back in the show. I'm looking forward to that, if it happens. But regardless, I'll keep going, whether or not the show, makes money or not, because I love doing it, and I like hearing back from people from all over the world. So thank you all. I hope you have a good rest of your day and week from whenever you're listening to this, and I will see everyone next time. And there will be an episode next week. Again, we'll be covering kind of northeastern Asia, and then the week of the 4th, July the 4th, so that following Monday, which would be, I believe, July the 7th or July the 8th, there will not be an episode out. I am taking that week off. I need it. And then we'll go from there. So thank you all. Have a good rest of your day. Goodbye. Peace.